Russia at war. Its president says it's demilitarizing and denazifying Ukraine. European leaders call it an outrageous invasion. How far will Putin go? Can the West stop him? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. Well, it's a war that no one you would think would have wanted. But overnight, Russian forces began a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. It's the largest military action in Europe since the Second World War. Already, casualties are mounting on both sides. Russian forces are attacking major cities and military bases. Ukraine says it's ready to fight and repel the incursion. NATO has activated its defense plans, while Western powers are promising harsh sanctions against Moscow's economy. Some Ukrainians are fleeing to neighboring Poland.
Just shattered, not for myself. Not, I don't care about my own safety. I care about Ukraine.
She has family.
And Ukrainians. I'm of Ukrainian heritage, and to see this happening to the country is just devastating. I just can't believe someone could be so evil.
President Vladimir Putin announced the invasion on a televised, pre-recorded address, telling Ukrainian troops to go home or face the consequences.
We urge you to lay down arms immediately and go home. I will explain. All servicemen of the Ukrainian army who comply with this requirement can freely leave the area of military actions and return to their families. Whoever would try to stop us and further create threats to our country, to our people, should know that Russia's response will be immediate and lead you to such consequences that you have never faced in your history. We are ready for any outcome.
U.S. President Joe Biden released a statement calling Russia's attack on Ukraine unprovoked and unjustified, saying President Putin has chosen a premeditated war that will bring a catastrophic loss of life and human suffering. Russia alone is responsible for the death and destruction this attack will bring, and the United States and its allies and partners will respond in a united and decisive way. The world will hold Russia accountable. NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance wants to prevent a conflict but is ready to defend itself.
NATO's core task is to protect and defend all allies. There must be no room for miscalculation or misunderstanding. An attack on one will be regarded as an attack on all. This is our collective security guarantee. Today, the North Atlantic Council decided to activate our defense plans at the request of our top military commander, General Todd Walters. This is a prudent and defensive step to protect and shield allied nations during this crisis. And it will enable us to deploy capabilities and forces, including the NATO Response Force, to where they are needed.
Well, let's bring in our guests into the show. We have joining us from Kiev, Sergei Tsikach. He's the CEO of Ukraine Invest, a Ukrainian government agency. In Moscow, Vladimir Sotnikov, a senior research associate at the Russian Academy of Sciences. And from Washington, D.C., Lawrence Korb, a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense. Welcome to all of you in the show. If I could start with Sergei then. What do you make, Sergei, of Putin's military goal? What's the thinking in Kiev? Do they think he is going to try and take over the whole country?
Well, it's the beginning of a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. This is a very dangerous thing. And we have seen already victims of this invasion. And not only Kiev or the border was attacked. Even cities like 600 or 700 kilometers away from Kiev, cities in the west of Ukraine, were attacked by Russian missiles. So let me be very clear. This is beginning of the European genocide through the war of a very big scale. But Ukraine will not back down. We are fighting back. And at the moment, there are fights around Kyiv, and already Russian planes were took down, and tanks as well, and helicopters. So this is a very serious case. And this is a very serious case, not only for Ukraine. This is a very serious case for the whole world.
Right.
Because if Russia will not be stopped now, this can spread throughout the Europe and throughout the world. So let me be clear about that.
Okay, talking about Russia, let's get the perspective from Moscow now. And I want to ask Vladimir, when President Putin announced this operation, he said the goal is not to occupy, but to demilitarize and denazify. How do you demilitarize a country without occupying it?
Well, actually, that's correct. But first of all, I would like to say good afternoon, probably, to all the TV watchers. And I also I would like to disagree with my Ukrainian colleague, because it sounds like propaganda, actually. No, I mean that Russia is not aiming at conquering or even invading or something like that of all Ukrainian territory. And Russia certainly is not going to furthermore, to go furthermore, as he put it, so if I understand correctly, that Russia is going to threaten the Eastern Europe. So answering your question, I think that demilitarization of Ukraine could be done when all the military units, I mean, military units who are shelling the peaceful citizens of Donetsk and Lugansk Republic will be eliminated, and when there will be a situation that nothing would be dangerous for the citizens of Donetsk and Lugansk Republics.
So the suggestion seems to be then, are you saying, Vladimir, in your understanding, that Putin simply wants to eliminate Ukraine's military abilities? That seems a very difficult
I'm
thing.
I'm not contemplating that. I mean, I don't know, actually. I'm not a state employee.
Understood.
No, I don't know.
I'm just asking in your understanding or analysis of the situation.
This is just my understanding. That's right.
Right. Let's bring Lawrence Corbin. Lawrence, how long can the Ukrainians hold out in the estimations of Washington?
Well, I think they can hold out for a long time in two ways. First of all, with their conventional forces, which are much better than they were in 2014, the last time Russia invaded, and with the increasing equipment that we have given them, that makes them more lethal. Then the second thing is, even if the Russians should prevail in a conventional war, the question then becomes, what about an insurgency? The Ukrainians have been organizing an insurgency for a while. And as the Russians found out in Afghanistan, and we did too, it's one thing to win the conventional battle, but it's much more difficult to control the country. And I guess the real question I'd like to see answered is, what is Putin's aim here? Does he want to incorporate Ukraine back into Russia? Does he want to put in a friendly government there? And how long is he willing to pay the cost of dealing with it for the lives? And then, of course, with the sanctions that not just Europe, but Asian countries like Japan, Singapore, and Taiwan are putting on Russia.
A lot for us to pick out there. Let's go back, though, to Sergei and take stock of what's happened so far. Sergei, how much damage have these airstrikes or missile strikes dealt to Ukraine's critical infrastructure as far as we know at this point? Electricity still up and running, fuel depots, as well as the military bases, of course.
Well, we have seen attacks on our strategic targets, of course. But still, Ukraine fights back, so our military is getting ready and already given some very good response to Russian aggression. So there is no serious effect at the moment on Ukraine. And I think that the idea of Putin is to make a very quick war and to win quick. This will not happen in Ukraine. And let me respond to that nonsense. I apologize for this statement, but today I can say, said by the Russian speaker, Ukraine is a peaceful country, and the only one who needs to be demilitarized is the Russian Federation. And the president of Russian Federation and his militant friends they should be put to international tribunal as criminals against criminal things that they do against humanity, you know, and this is a very serious case. And let me remind you one historical case, the 30th of September, 1938, when the Sudet region of Czech Republic was given through peaceful treaty to Adolf Hitler. And this is what he was trying to do at the time. So this is very similar what President Putin is doing now. And only 1 year after 1938, the Second World War began. So this is what the whole world needs to remember now. So we are very close. We are on the brink of something similar. So they need to back down and they need to apologize to the whole world, and they will have to be put to prison.
All right, let's see how this goes. Let me bring Vladimir back in. And once again, pointing out, Vladimir, I know you're not an official spokesperson. You're not an official for the Russian government. So I'm just asking you for your analysis. Does it look like we're going to be looking at the sort of scenario which a lot of Western intelligence agencies were warning about, that there'll be an initial period of strikes, airstrikes, missile strikes, followed maybe a week or so later by a wider deployment of ground troops? Is that what we're looking at?
No, I don't think so, actually. My analysis is that there will be strikes, targeted strikes against military installations in Ukraine. And after that, there will be that is a limitation of all the special operation. And after that, there will be the end of the military operation. I'm not contemplating that there will be occupation, so-called occupation of Ukrainian territory by the
ground forces. So just to jump in, Vladimir, do you really think it's possible, though, that Vladimir Putin will pull out Russian troops completely, well, completely out of Ukraine might be a tall order, given the situation in Donbass and Crimea, but at least not beyond Crimea.
Sorry for my interruption. Sorry for my interruption. We're not talking right now about Donbass and Lugansk republics, because this is independent states who are asking formally for the support and defense from Russian Federation. So this is according to national law, in accordance with Article 51, Part 8.
Well, according to international law, a lot would dispute whether Lugansk and Donetsk are indeed independent republics. We know Russia has recognized them, but moving beyond that, let me bring Lawrence back in. I mean, a situation you were hinting at, a la Afghanistan or Iraq, do you think, Lawrence, Putin would be weary of sending his troops deep into Ukraine, especially as we get towards Western Ukraine? Is it likely that we will see a situation where Russian troops will be pulled back to the eastern and southern parts of Ukraine, at least, rather than getting embroiled into some kind of long-term guerrilla conflict?
Well, you could see that, but then what is your goal? Who's going to be running Ukraine? Will you still have Zelensky there? Will you try and put your own, leader in there? And will the Ukrainian people support him and not create an insurgency? That's the real question. Because if you're not willing to go all the way militarily, then what do you do if you haven't achieved your objective?
Today we've seen, of course, this massive operation, an invasion, that many are calling an invasion of Ukraine. Does this mean the end of the road for diplomacy? Let's not forget, just a few days ago, there was talk of even perhaps a Biden-Putin meeting. All that seems very distant now.
I'm not representing Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine. So, and Ministry of Foreign Affairs can give you a proper political statement about diplomatic measures that can be taken or are being taken at the moment. What I can state as a Ukrainian, mostly, because my main job is to attract investments and promote economy in Ukraine. But today, I'm an average Ukrainian who was affected. My mom, who is 73 years old, was waking up today in Ivano-Frankivsk by an air response siren. And there was a missile going over the city to hit one of the targets. So this is a crime. I am a lawyer. I'm an international lawyer. This is crime against humanity. So we need to focus on that rather than think about what can be done on the ground or not. Russian military have their plans. Ukrainian military is strong, and we are fighting back. So it's all about military, and they have their own plans.
Right.
But we need to be clear. The crime has taken place.
Okay. Well, let me go back to Lawrence Korb. Lawrence, Western countries have announced another round of sanctions. How effective do you think they'll be? Russia has been under sanctions for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, but never to this extent. And I think one of the big things is when the Germans canceled the Nord Stream pipeline, because Russia makes a lot of its money by selling energy abroad. And if they can't do that, that's going to have an impact on their economy. Keeping them away from the international banking system will make it more difficult for them to conduct business. They have to export things like wheat. Are people still going to buy that? So they're going to pay a price. The question is, how long is Putin willing to do that, and how long will the Russian people do? And if you go to a ground war, there are going to be lots of casualties. There'll probably be more on the Ukrainian side, but you're talking about 5,000 to 10,000 Russian soldiers being killed. And don't forget, the Russians still have conscription. So that these are people who are not volunteers. A lot of them have been forced in there. So what we need to do is find a face-saving way out before my colleague from Ukraine pointed out this thing gets out of hand and it'll be a disaster.
Let's take the view from Moscow. In your analysis, Vladimir, Russia has large reserves. It's about $600 billion. That's about 40% or more of its GDP. That's more reserves than most countries. How far will that go to cushioning the effect of Western sanctions? Do you think people, the policymakers in Moscow, are worried about Western sanctions?
I think yes. No. There are two, actually, things, analytically speaking, which are going after your question. First, the first thing is that Moscow actually has used to live under sanctions, and somehow Russian government actually managed to redeploy economic resources and financial resources under these permanent sanctions, which have been going on for already 8 years. After the 2014. And second element is that I think probably there will be some worsening of economic conditions in Russia. And because of the exchange rate ruble to dollar, you know that ruble is now declining and dollar is rising. But eventually Russia has a lot of so-called sovereign reserve just to make currency intervention, foreign currency interventions. And I think eventually this bad effect will be again eliminated.
Let's get the
this
view
is
from
my
Kiev.
Analysis.
All right, let's get Sergei from Kiev. So, Sergei, it sounds like the leaders in Ukraine are not entirely satisfied with the Western response, and they think Western countries should do far more.
Well, we are thankful to all leaders for what has been done so far. We're thankful to our neighbors like Lithuania, Latvia, and other countries that provided weapons to Ukraine. We're also thankful to European Union and American friends for sanctions. But we need to remember that this is a Russian operation under a false flag, as was rightly stated by President Biden. And the one way to affect Russia is to limit economic and stop economic cooperation with Russia at the moment. And this has to be done quick. We need to remember that one third of energy supplies to Europe comes from Russia. And all this money that is spent on Russian energy is being used to produce weapons and to act as a tyrant, you know, in the 21st century, and to make a war in the center of Europe. So this is unacceptable. So, as I said, we want to see very strong international response and very quick international response.
What kind of international response do you think most Ukrainians would like to see, Sergei, beyond what the West has already done?
Well, we, of course, would be keen to see some military support. But as we have...
You mean beyond simply supplying weapons? Because it's unlikely. Any Western leaders have already said they're not sending their troops to Ukraine,
We understand that this is unlikely. We want to see military support in different terms. But we also want to see real serious sanctions on Ukraine to break down their economy. Not
sanctions
for the
sake
of
breaking down... Sanctions on Russia, you mean, just to correct
there. Yes, on Russia. On Russia, of course, yes. Not for the sake of bringing kind of, I don't know, bad situation to the people of Russia, but to stop them using money for military purposes. And this is what needs to be done quick, because I can tell you that predators, they do not stop themselves. Predators, they need to be stopped.
All right, let me take the view back again to Moscow and ask Vladimir, in your analysis, Vladimir, if the West does succeed in putting the squeeze on Russia over Ukraine, what are the chances that maybe Russia will find other sensitive spots, soft spots, to have a go back at the West, have a go back at NATO, maybe in areas like the Balkans? There's talk of Russian-leading Bosnian Serbs being involved in a war in Bosnia.
If I understand you correctly, you mean what are the Russian further actions, you know, whether it will be involved in the conflicts in Bosnia or, well, in Baltic states. Am I correct in my understanding?
Well, maybe not involved, but may assist, shall we say, or facilitate conflicts that would be a problem and a burden for NATO in places like the Balkans, yes.
No, I don't think so. My analysis, actually, that there will be no such interference on the Russian side to go to other frozen conflicts, and not frozen, even live conflicts, like those which are going in Balkans, or conflicts which are going, internal crises in Baltic states. I think that this is not the purpose. This is not the purpose of Moscow. This is just the situation when there was a loss of confidence on behalf of Moscow, in my opinion, towards the West and especially towards the Ukrainian authorities. Because Moscow has suggested, I'm just reiterating myself, Moscow has suggested any peaceful means to prevent the situation, this situation which is having now in Ukraine.
All right, I think we've got a couple of minutes. We're going to try and split it between both guests so we get a final thought in. Sergei, how much of a game changer do you see this for the whole of Europe?
Let me react again to that statement. It's a typical Russian propaganda. If you listen to Putin's statements, I cannot call him president or mister at the moment, even that. If you listen to Putin's statements like 10 years ago, eight years ago, he was saying that there is no way that we would take Crimea back. Then he was saying that there is no way that we would act at the east of Ukraine or anywhere in Ukraine. Just a couple of days ago, they were saying there is no way that we will attack Kiev.
Right.
Now they're saying there is no way we will attack Balkans or any other states.
So obviously a lot of deficit of trust.
They can do this.
Right,
they can do
this. We've got about 60 seconds.
We've
got about less than 60 seconds. Okay, let me give also a final, might be less than 6 seconds now, to Vladimir. Vladimir, why should the world believe Russia? Isn't this a bit of a game changer in international politics? Many would say, you know, invading a sovereign state, that's a no-no in the basics of international law and the UN charters.
Well, actually, I think that eventually, my belief that eventually the diplomacy will win. What I mean to say that there were disruptions and violations on behalf of Ukrainian authorities of the people in Donetsk and Luhansk republics. So let's forget about international law. Let's go to the diplomacy.
Okay, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. So let's thank our guests. Let's thank our guests very much in Kiev and Moscow for coming and sharing their thoughts. We know you have very different perspectives on this, but we appreciate hearing them. Sergei Tsikhach, Vladimir Sotnikov and Lawrence Korb. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the show again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is at AJInsideStory. From me, Sami Zeidan, and the whole team here. For now, it's goodbye.